Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Welcome, Moors and Moors Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Sahaka Amana L. Bay. And tonight we have part two of the Masons. This time we're going to deal with your boule and your secret societies. And keep in mind that on Thursday, upcoming Thursday, the Grand National Chairman of the Moorish American Government will return. And we'll be doing our final phase of this broadcast, part three, when we will deal with the Masons and the Illuminati. This will be our final episode. It will be part three. It will be this coming Thursday when we will be joined by the Grand National Chairman of the Moorish American Government. Before we start with the formalities, I want to say congratulations to all the brothers and sisters out there who have gotten a hold to my library. You've gotten your estates in place, and the tremendous amount of success that you're having in dealing with your state officials and public officials and sheriffs and all these people and policemen. I just want to say congratulations, and may the success continue with you, and continue to stay in touch with me as we move forward into taking advantage of your birth estate and using the powers of contract law. And tonight, as usual, we're offering our 14th Amendment exposed as well as the commerce game. And the way to access these things is by contacting me at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we will rush that to you. Also, the success of the brothers and sisters that I mentioned earlier is due to the acquisition of my archives, the library where this information is placed, and all the tools are available to them, all the background information, all the access information. And for those of you who have already begun to work on your World Citizen's Passport, congratulations to you. The way you access that library is simply by telephoning me before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, area code 904-303-9061, and we'll get you in there as quickly as possible so that you can go ahead and get started. Okay? So now we're going to go directly on into the broadcast, so you all sit tight, and we'll be coming back after this plug here and get on down to dealing with the meat of this matter. Keep in mind, if you have questions and comments, go ahead and raise your hand. I recognize your hand, and we'll go ahead and let you in, okay?
I'm a black teenager, and I have something to say. I'm only young right now. I'm only a child today, but soon I'll be a leader in this world. Soon I'll be writing this story. I may look like a child,
but my mind is so much more.
This is Black America.
Get out.
And this is Black America.
I'm very aware and conscious of my color,
in society.
Bertram Lee is a freshman at Haverford College in Haverford, Pennsylvania. Tuition is $38,000 a year. The school boasts four Nobel laureates, and students play croquet on manicured lawns. In a student body of nearly 1,200, there are 98 blacks. Even in this idyllic setting, Lee feels the tensions of race in America.
Sometimes you wear fitted hats, you don't wear it straight like a baseball cap. And they're like, don't be offended, but you know, are you a thug or a gangster or something? I'm like, what? I look like Carlton Banks.
His grandfather was a prominent judge in Baltimore. His late father, a businessman, co-owned the Denver Nuggets. His mother is a top lobbyist on Capitol Hill. Lee says she instilled in him a love for his race.
Black is beautiful, man. Black is beautiful. People don't say that enough.
Bertram Lee is black and affluent in America. He says that means he straddles two worlds and two sets of expectations. From blacks he hears,
you're rich. You're a rich boy. You don't understand anything about what we go through or what the struggle is.
And from whites,
you're either an affirmative action case or you're here because you're playing a sport.
Dr. Carlotta Miles has known Bertram Lee all his life. She's a renowned psychiatrist in Washington, D.C.
Do you think most Americans have no clue that privileged, wealthy, well-connected black people exist in decent-sized numbers?
We're invisible.
Why?
Because we don't match the stereotype. The stereotype for black Americans is poverty, failure, victimization, and mediocrity.
These are great.
Dr. Miles, a mother of three, emphasizes success in her home with a family hall of fame. The hall is covered with photographs dating back to the 1850s.
That's my dad and his colleagues. These are all doctors. And that's Grandpa Henry. Basically made a fortune before the Civil War. This is my beloved grandmother. These people all had graduate degrees at the time when most people didn't have a college degree.
Achievements made despite the racism that existed then and now.
This was our 23rd year.
23 years ago, Dr. Miles created the Tuxedo Ball.
Actually, this tells me.
A place for privileged black children to mingle and make professional connections. Bertram Lee believes it will help his future political career.
You could find yourself a job, an internship, opportunity, advice. You're talking to people who generally are amazing at what they do. They're successful. It's so hard to find that, especially like being out in the world.
You have to be black and you have to be wealthy.
You don't have to be wealthy. You just have to be a part of the group.
Affairs like these exclude many, says Darren Walker, a vice president at the Rockefeller Foundation. He spent his career studying race.
Many people in the African-American community react angrily because one part of our community seems quite comfortable adopting the exclusive practices of the majority community that for many years kept us out.
I don't think the Tuxedo Ball should be vilified. It's doing something for the privileged children whom people think don't need anything.
What they see is exclusion. What they see is elitism.
Most of us are tremendously active doing things for needy children as well.
That afternoon before the gala,
there are several black cultures.
A day of seminars.
If I don't believe in myself, how can I convince you to be my girlfriend? How could I convince you to give me a job?
Get your report together.
Leadership comes from.
In a seminar called Pathways to Leadership, Bertram Lee spoke about his elite New England high school.
We'd had many issues with diversity. One of my teachers in my class actually called me a nigger in class.
He said, Ma, there was an incident. One of the teachers used the N-word in the classroom.
Lee's mother, Laura Murphy, was hurt.
The sense of anguish you feel when your child has that hurt sound in his voice, and I was really pleased when he told me that he was going to organize a forum at the headmaster's house.
What's the lesson in that?
Do something. Do you let it in? Do you let them tell you who you are? No.
That evening, the big event. It's a magical night with historic precedent. From W.E.B. Du Bois at the 1910 Midwinter Assembly to Carlotta Buffy Gordon, now known as Dr. Miles. Affluent blacks have been passing on the legacy of success for well over 100 years.
What the Tuxedo Ball reminds me personally is that you cannot settle for mediocrity.
We mobilize our kids to go out and make a difference.
My idea of blackness may not be what society says or what other people say blackness is. I can't help that I was born in the place that I was born in. I can only hope to make the world a better place from that.
Okay. Now, I want to say something here. I put that on. That's Inside the Boule, Inside the Elite Black Circle, or what we call the Black Circle, and people who are affluent inside the United States of African descent and who are a member of your societies and your sororities. And it's sort of like a kind of a locked circle. But I want you to compare that and all of the successes and things that they think they are achieving to the fact that the nation of people of African descent is in shambles. I mean, the reason I'm bringing this up is because I was got the opportunity one day to speak to a little Chinese girl. Well, she was actually a little Korean girl. And I asked her, I say, you're Korean? She shook her head, and then she said, yes. I say, do you know who George Washington was? And she looked at me, and she said, no. I say, do you know who Abraham Lincoln was? She said, no. I say, do you know anything about your country? She says, yes. And she began to tell me all of these things, most of which I never heard. She began to name places and streets and people and the things that she did. I mean, she had a thorough concept of her own identity and her own culture. And I thought that was extraordinary because I got another young man of African descent right around the same age. And I asked him the same questions. When I asked him about George Washington, he said he was the president of the United States. I said, who was Abraham Lincoln? He said, well, he was the president of the United States. And I said, well, tell me about your culture. And he said, I don't know what you mean. I said, well, you know, tell me about your history, about, you know, your ancestors and the great African men. And the first thing he began to tell me about was Martin Luther King. He told me about that, and that was pretty much the extent of what he thought was history. And I asked him, I say, do you go to school? He said, yeah. And I said, what school you go to? And he pointed right over there across the street to the little school. And I said, well, when you get out, do your mother and father teach you anything about your ancient history? And he didn't know what I meant, and I mentioned Africa to him. And he said he didn't know anything about that. And I guess the point that I'm trying to make is we go every day in and day out, and we fail to recognize that people all over the earth, from every culture on the face of this planet, outside the United States, and those who come inside this country from other places have a thorough knowledge of self and culture and their story, and have a limited knowledge concerning American history, what can't be considered ancient because they're a very, very young country, but they're totally immersed in their own culture. But for some unknown, strange reason before God, people of African descent inside this country seem to think, and a great deal of them seem to think, that it is unnecessary. It is not necessary for me to know anything about my own culture. I can go to the colleges and universities that have been put in place by the children whose forefathers were the murderers and exterminators of my own kind, and think that they're going to give me knowledge. They give me a college degree, they give me this, they give me that, and then I consider myself to have knowledge. But when you ask them to tell you something about their own selves, they have no knowledge of it. In my opinion, I think it's absolutely a phenomenon. I was watching a television news broadcast on World News, and they had a young man and a young woman, both from African descent, on that television broadcast. And it was the most, I began to actually look at that, because I don't normally watch TV, and I don't have TV in my house. Everything I put on, I have TVs in there, but I don't watch a regular television. But I watch this thing here, because I finally realized the extent of the damage that has been done to these people. This man and this woman had total opposite mannerism that I could recognize coming from people of African descent. Totally unrecognized. I mean, it was as if you had a dark-skinned people with someone else's total consciousness in their brain. The words, the mannerisms, the gestures, the laughter, everything was, to me, said that you are not of African descent. You remind me of a Caucasian. It was the most phenomenal thing that I've seen. It was that, as if that these two people had been turned upside down and inside out. Now, before I go any further, I'm going to go into the next plug, and then we'll come back to this. Keep in mind, if you got questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand, and I'll recognize them, okay? Wait till this next plug get in here.
Hey, welcome to Southern California KPFK, Brother Steve Coakley.
Hey, good evening, brother.
One of our great researchers that have exposed the boule, a phenomenon that most of us in the movement never knew about until you came and brought light, took the sheets off of these Negro Klan members and explained to us what the boule is all about. So what we'd like you to do is tell us the history of the boule, who the boule are, their origins, and the relationship to the ruling class.
Thank you, brother. Thank you for hosting me and my friends here, and appreciate you and all your company. Everybody's excessively intense, and that is the demand of the day. This secret society, this particular black secret society that we'll talk about today, is the first of the black Greek societies, started in 1904, and that word that you said, boule, is actually an acronym. It's a Sigma Pi Phi, Sigma Pi Phi, 1904 in Philadelphia. And for most of our people, we are not prepped to the responsibility of secret society in the American society.
Mm-hmm.
And this founding constitution, this illegal criminal enterprise, was a Masonic affair. And a Masonry is a form of secret society. There are other well-known secret societies like Skull and Bones at Yale, of which this corrupt president and his father were members of. And it is that society that the black society modeled itself after. So when they wrote their first history book, The History of Sigma Pi Phi, by a very noted black author, university president Charles Wesley, who wrote the history book for the Elks, the Prince Hall Masons, National Council of Negro Women, Alpha Phi Alpha, and Sigma Pi Phi. And as a result, in there, in page 28 of its first history book, it noted that it wanted to be like Skull and Bones at Yale. It was right here in Los Angeles at the Good Life on a Friday night. If you remember this time, the NAACP had a convention here, and LeGrand Clegg and Marla Gibbs were accused of making inflammatory statements.
Working with Dr. Graham's book, The Mannequin Line Motif.
Yes, that weekend, the Boulay was meeting here, July of 1990. They were having their twice every other year, convention, biannual. And it was a front page article in the L.A. Times by Karen Grigsby Gates, who denoted that these elite black men were meeting in Los Angeles at this time. That was the first. I remember sending someone to the car to bring it in, and we read it from the stage of the Boulay on July 18th, the day the story appeared, front page L.A. Times. And I thought it was unusual that the L.A. Times knew of this society, and I didn't know of them. Now, for our audience to understand, I'm starting off trying to explain to black people the impact of international policy groups like the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, when the bankers began to take over the American cities in the 70s, New York 75, Cleveland 77, Chicago 79, and here in California they used Proposition 13 to suck up the surplus out the budget, and bankers began to take over from municipalities the governing of the cities. Mm-hmm. And as I was scratching, I could not figure out how was there such black complicity in this centralization of worldwide power, the New World Order. It's on the dollar bill, pyramid by white men who never built one, never saw one, but they emulated this symbol. And now comes a series of societies, and now comes forth this black one in 1904. As we began to read deeper, it had another analogy in the story of the Skull and Bones. It wasn't until we got the history book that the analogy that looked happenstantial in the story in the L.A. Times was actually deeper in the actual history book, where they drew attention to Skull and Bones. It denoted that W.E.B. Du Bois was a member, and it began to describe influential people in the present-day society and historically our university, historically black college presidents are primarily coming out of this advisors to the king. And that word, that Boulay word, can be looked up in an encyclopedia. Well, now people don't use them. They use Internet. And that's a dangerous thing, a dangerous dependency. But Boulay, B-O-U-L-E, the Greek version. There's a French version that's a coming together, a conclave, the AKA called their convention, the Boulay. But the Greek word is what we're looking for, the advisors to the king. The lower house of the Greek parliament is called Boulay. Mm-hmm. And if you know the American congressional system, Senate, 6 years, more power, authority, only 100, two per state. Congress, 435, have to run every 2 years. Your lower house has less power and authority. So it appears as if, in finding the Boule, that within it was a subordination to something else. And in its history book, it drew attention. Here's a logo. And this is a, their logo is a Grecian sphinx. It's an animal. And this Grecian sphinx is similar to a griffin or a gargoyle. Kind of ironically, the Boule had their convention in Los Angeles in 1941. And where else? Griffin Park. And this logo, this symbol, is a guardian animal. This would be similar to a Rottweiler or a dog or a German Shepherd. They tend to protect something higher than itself.
Let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. I went to Howard University, for instance. There are a number of African so-called Greek societies, fraternities, as well as in our community, there's a number of secret, semi-secret organizations. How is the Boule different than the numerous fraternities and groups in our community? What is the relationship to the ruling class?
Father, son. Mm-hmm. Nine make up the axis of the Black Greek dynasty. There are four male societies, four female societies, and the Boule make the ninth one. Mm-hmm. They're the first, 1904 series, the Alphas. I'm not versed in the exact order, but I have all of their history books, and each of them draw attention to things where they got their ritual from. The Deltas, draw attention to Freemasonry. Said our ritual came from Mary Church Terrell, mm-hmm. whose husband, Robert Terrell, was head of the Masonic Lodge in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. Mary Church Terrell, Mary Church, is the daughter of the first black millionaire in America, Robert Church of Memphis, Tennessee. Huge mausoleum to him there. Those societies, those four male, those four female, and the boule tend to make up a aristocracy. We talked in the park about the 10%, not in the sense of us in exclusivity, but them in the terms of deputizing 10% of the population to assure that the 90% never catch on. Mm-hmm. And it's very important to know that if you look to Alpha Phi Alpha website, there's alphas, kappas, Qs, and Phi Beta Sigma. There's Zeta Phi Beta, Delta Sigma Theta, a.k.a. and Delta, I'm missing somebody, Sigma Gamma Rho. If you look to, say, the Alpha website, they brag about being 95% of all black lawyers. Mm. Now, if the alphas are 95% of the black lawyers, what does that leave the kappas, the Qs? Okay, now we're in the 90s. They claim to be 65% of the black accountants, the lawyers, the doctors, dominating. And it may be that our professions are dominated by people in the Greek societies. At Howard, there was a student that I tried to help get a doctorate in engineering. Very exclusive about giving them out. Mm-hmm. If you get one, you're set for life. Mm-hmm. Morgan State, Howard are very exclusive. Took big money from governments to make engineers, but the brothers weren't coming out. And when we got deeply involved, we found how close-knit, how selective the professional process is. So he ended up at the patent office. He was a Kappa. He said, we have 15 blacks, one female, 14 brothers, and all 14 of us are Kappas. Only Kappas going to get in here. Mm-hmm. And there are jobs all over where we think we're applying for something fair and open. But I would suggest that the ruling class recognize this was a very significant period, Dedan, when they decided that they would give a college degree mm-hmm. to a person of African ancestry in America who, after Reconstruction, should have been pretty pissed off. Mm-hmm. And so they were very weak about sharing. So in 1900, there are only 2,000 degrees.
Okay. Now, that was part one. I see we got someone with their hand raised, and I'm going to open up the line. And keep in mind now, if you got questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand at any time, and I'll go ahead and answer you. Okay? Area code 904. State your name, your question, and comment.
Hi, my name is Sharon Bay, and
hey,
I wanted to comment. Hey, I wanted to comment on the analogy that you did by asking with the little Korean girl and her knowing her history and how you asked some of our brothers or something, and they had no idea anything about their history. And
okay.
I don't think that's their fault because the education system mandates that you have to enroll your kids by the age of 6 into the school system or you'll be arrested and tried for that. And then once they get in that school system, they're just brainwashed and bamboozled, and there's no way to combat that because they're not going to teach them anything about their history. They're only going to go over American history, United States history. And I know this for a fact because I'm an educator myself, and I taught history. And one reason why I'm not doing it right now is because I got fired for it because when I was going through my history, the history curriculum that I was supposed to present, I just found the whole book to just be full of lies. And I followed the curriculum, but I had to add my own in there when I recognized something as a direct untruth. And this is what is being taught to our children, each and every day that they go into the school system, they're just being taught a bunch of lies. And if they're not telling them anything about their own history, they don't have anything to be as proud of. So, and the circle just continues and continues.
Okay. Well, now, let me ask you this. In your opinion, what do you think would be the solution that we can deal with under the circumstances now, in our current circumstances, what could the average mother and father do now that we know this? What do you think they could do? as a solution?
The only thing that the solution, and what I've come to find out by knowing more about my history, that there's only really one solution, and that's to be a part of your own government. And that's the only way you're ever going to be able, once you get your own government, maybe you can get your own schools and educate our kids the way they're supposed to be educated, learning about our history instead of someone else's history. So that's really the only solution that I see.
Okay. Now, and I have to agree with you. I'm a minister for the Moorish American government, and we do have a teaching program, and we have a special class that comes on tonight, which is Thursday night, where the children get a chance to show their wares. But now, let's say if we got a mother and a father of African descent, they're not a part of the Moorish government, they don't know anything about it, but their kids are in the Eurocentric school system. What do you think that they could do? What could they do immediately in dealing with the situation as a solution?
Well, it has to begin at home, but if the parents don't have any knowledge, and I know for a fact I was in that same situation not so very long ago. I knew nothing about my history, not deep. Of course, you know, I knew all the local heroes, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, and things of that nature, but I knew nothing about my African kings and queens from ancient times. So if I knew nothing about it, then it was no way for me to pass that on to my kids. So basically we were all just living up under the European history and accepting everything that they said as truth. And if a child is in that type of atmosphere, you can't blame them because the parents didn't give them any knowledge or anything about it because they don't know. So like I said, the only way that you're going to break that cycle is we're going to have to, some type of way, one by one, come in knowledge of ourselves and grow and build our family around our own history. And that's just going to only be accomplished by getting the word out there. And some will listen and some won't. You can't save everybody.
Okay. All right. Well, sister, I appreciate you coming in. And as we go through the broadcast, if you have any more questions, feel free to raise your hand. And for the rest of you out there that are listening, you can follow the prompts on your phone and raise your hand, and we will we'll recognize you and get you in here so that we can answer your questions and listen to your comments. I want to say that the sister have brought a very, very valid point. You can start right where you are. If you're not a part of the Moorish American government, but you have children in school, she answered correctly. You go ahead and invest in educational materials from your perspective, because what happens is we have to understand the workings of the human brain. Most of us think that we see with our eyes. You do not see with your eyes. You see with your brain. Your eyes are only lenses that transfers information that's being recorded by the brain. And when you take a continuous series of photographs, which the brain does, it this information is stored up in the brain. And when you constantly see images of someone else, you constantly receive information about someone else, you watch television, and 99% of what you see on television has a face that doesn't look like your one, doing situations in communities that you don't recognize. It's not happening in your community. It's all being recorded by the brain, you see. And then there's subliminal messages and all this stuff. You get in your automobile, and you're riding down the highway, and 99% of what you see has a face that doesn't look like yours, or a concept that you can't recognize that you don't deal with in your community, you see. So in order for you to succeed, you're going to have to turn this thing around. You're going to have to become conscious, pay attention, and do what it takes to salvage the minds of your children. If your children is going in school, you should send them in school armed. They should be armed with knowledge of self, knowledge of culture. So when the teacher attempts to give them something especially about their about history or what is called history, then the children can object and they can ask questions. You said Christopher Columbus discovered America. Well, I found out that there were people already here. Teacher, can you please explain to me how you can discover something when it belongs to somebody else? You know, these questions can be put forth to the teacher. Now, if you're a teacher, you got a degree, you've been put in there to teach somebody, then you're supposed to teach. But now you're also supposed to make sure that you answer the students if they got a legitimate question. Okay? Now, and I just wanted to put that out there. Now, for those of you who don't have the finances and stuff to purchase the books, because they are antique bookstores and stuff that we can get our knowledge from. I've been into a library the other day, and in one of the most prominent parts of town is a Caucasian community, and it had this big library in there. And I went inside the library, there's computers everywhere. But the bookshelves was like a sense of somewhat scarcity. And when I went to look at the different titles of the books and stuff, the only thing that I saw in the whole place was worthless information and absolutely nothing that I could use to aid my nation or to change my consciousness at all, other than the fact that I will have to get on the computer and do something about it. Now, I see area code 716. I'm going to open up your line.
Islam?
Islam, Mo.
Hey.
Let me have it.
Yamaya from, coming from the Birmingham territory. I was calling because I have a 26-year-old, a 22-year-old, and a 21-year-old who I pulled out of school. Back when they were, my 26-year-old was in the fourth grade. Well, she was in the fifth grade. And I started having problems with my sister's homeschooling her children. And there's nine of us, and that's one sister out of nine of us decided to homeschool her children. But I noticed her children had a different kind of mind concept. Mm-hmm. So I started talking to her, and she started teaching me different things. And the first thing she told me to teach them is about the flag, the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. And so she said, y'all study that before while your children at school and see if they understand it. So I taught my children about the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag and how it didn't have nothing to do with them or us. And so when they went to school, when Pledge of Allegiance started to come, my children would sit down quietly because I told them to be respectful for everybody else. So they would sit down quietly and fold their hands or put their heads down. And so I would get calls during the day saying, we have your child won't stand up and do the Pledge of Allegiance. I'm like, okay, well, you get paid from 8 to 3 to watch them, and if they're not disrupting the class, I think you need to talk to them, ask them why they're not standing up. And why are you asking me? Because if I tell you why, then you can say it's me talking. If they're strong enough to stand, sit down, let them sit down and stand up and tell you what they mean. And I tell you, my children got a positive effect for a while from the teachers. But then we got two new teachers came in, started giving us problems, but then I went on and pulled them out of school. So none of my children have been in school no more since then. Because I said that I've seen the effect on them, and, you know, they knew. You know, they were little. They was like, well, Mommy, why are we getting in trouble if people are still, you know, being racist and this and that, and this is, no. I'm like, you know, it's like one nation, indivisible, you know, and they were saying this stuff. It's like, this people are still like this. I'm like, well, baby, I can't make them understand it. So we just took them out, we put them in homeschool. And so when we don't want our children to get into these sororities and these frats and stuff, I pull them on. Because I have people in my family that's in that kind of stuff, and I try to teach them and tell them to study first. Mm-hmm. They talking about these brothers and these sisters had their back. But I'm like, if you ain't high enough up, sweetie, and if you don't have enough money, Federal Reserve notes, in which your brother, I mean, my brother, her father don't, I said, you're not going to get up high enough where they're going to tell you anything or get you into stuff. They sell that dream, and I don't see it happening. I tell you, I've been attacked since I've been in Birmingham by Eastern Stars, left and right from different places. They always walking up to me and say, hey, or they hear me talking to somebody like, well, you need to come join our organization. I'm like, I don't join anything. But I just wanted to put that little comment in there because You know, I haven't talked to you in a minute, and I was sitting here studying, and it was quiet, and I was getting the boys ready for the for tonight's class, and I know we got to get off the phone so I can give it to them so they can take over, but I'm starting there, too. I'm part of the Marriage and Working Government, and my 13-year-old, my 11-year-old boys, they've been getting on for the last couple of weeks because we got the 101 questions down, and we've been downloading them, and they've been studying them, and, you know, we go back and forth with them, and I got the most positive reaction with them that I've been trying to do with my 13-year-old by them listening to the show. They called in the children's show, and they heard another little boy discussing how he deal with his little brother when his little brother pissed him off. So my son got off the phone. He came to me. He said, "Mom, I got some information, and I think I'm going to try it." And he told me how the little boy handled his problems, and I was like, wow. You know, sometimes it's better for other children to teach other children. You know, he understood, and it's great. So we're going to get ready for our show tonight so they can, you know, do their little class, and I'm going to come back in here and listen to my class. And peace and love to everybody out there, and for all you mothers and fathers out there, homeschooling, if you can't get the schools to start teaching our children the right way, we got to homeschool them until we get our own. Peace and love.
Peace and love, sister. All right. That's very, very good. We're going to go into our next segment, and keep in mind, if you got questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand, and we will recognize your hand and see if we can get your questions or comments answered here this evening. We're going to get into the meat of the situation involving the Boulay.
Hey, welcome to Southern California KPFK, Brother Steve Coakley.
Hey, good evening, brother.
One of our great researchers that have exposed the Boulay, a phenomenon that most of us in the movement never knew about until you came and brought light, took the sheets off of these Negro Klan members and explained to us what the Boulay is all about. So what we'd like you to do is tell us the history of the Boulay, who the Boulay are, their origins, and the relationship to the ruling class.
Thank you, brother. One, I would thank you for hosting me and my friends here, and appreciate you and all your company. Everybody's excessively intense, and that is the demand of the day. This secret society, this particular black secret society that we'll talk about today, is the first of the black Greek societies, started in 1904, and that word that you said, Boule, is actually an acronym. It's a Sigma Pi Phi, Sigma Pi Phi, 1904 in Philadelphia. And for most of our people, we are not prepped to the responsibility of secret society in the American society.
Mm-hmm.
And this founding constitution, this illegal criminal enterprise, was a Masonic affair. And a Masonry is a form of secret society. There are other well-known secret societies like Skull and Bones at Yale, of which this corrupt president and his father were members of. And it is that society that the black society modeled itself after. So when they wrote their first history book, The History of Sigma Pi Phi, by a very noted black author, University President Charles Wesley, who wrote the history book for the Elks, the Prince Hall Masons, National Council of Negro Women, Alpha Phi Alpha, and Sigma Pi Phi. And as a result, in there, in page 28 of its first history book, it noted that it wanted to be like Skull and Bones at Yale. It was right here in Los Angeles at the Good Life on a Friday night. If you remember this time, the NAACP had a convention here, and LeGrand Clegg and Marla Gibbs were accused of making inflammatory statements.
Working with Dr. Graham's book, The Mannequin Leitmotif.
Yes. That weekend, the Boulay was meeting here, July of 1990. They were having their twice every other year, convention, biannual. And it was a front page article in the L.A. Times by Karen Grigsby Gates,
mm-hmm.
who denoted that these elite black men were meeting in Los Angeles at this time. That was the first. I remember sending someone to the car to bring it in, and we read it from the stage of the Boulay. On July 18th, the day the story appeared, front page L.A. Times. And I thought it was unusual that the L.A. Times knew of this society, and I didn't know of them. Now, for our audience to understand, I'm starting off trying to explain to black people the impact of international policy groups like the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations. When the bankers began to take over the American cities in the 70s, New York 75, Cleveland 77, Chicago 79, and here in California, they used Proposition 13 to suck up the surplus out the budget, and bankers began to take over from municipalities the governing of the cities. Mm-hmm. And as I was scratching, I could not figure out how was there such black complicity in this centralization of worldwide power, the New World Order. It's on the dollar bill, pyramid by white men who never built one, mm-hmm. never saw one. Mm-hmm. But they emulated this symbol. And now comes a series of societies, and now comes forth this black one in 1904. As we began to read deeper, it had another analogy in the story to Skull and Bones. It wasn't until we got the history book that the analogy that looked happenstantial in the story in the L.A. Times was actually deeper in the actual history book where they drew attention to Skull and Bones. It denoted that W.E.B. Du Bois was a member, and it began to describe influential people in the present-day society and historically our university, historically black college presidents are primarily coming out of this advisors to the king. And that word, that Boulay word, can be looked up in a encyclopedia. Well, now people don't use them, they use internet. And that's a dangerous thing, a dangerous dependency. But Boulay, B-O-U-L-E, the Greek version. There's a French version.
Okay. Now, I had to play that just one more time so that we can get some background information on what we're about to go into now. We're going to go into the dangers, and you have to ask yourself a question. Now, we had men like Martin Luther King, we had Malcolm X, Stokely Carmichael, H. Rap Brown, and I remember right here in Jacksonville, Florida, Rap Brown was scheduled to come here and hold a rally. And we had a very, very racist time down in here. You could walk inside the bus station right downtown today, right over the bathroom where it used to say white only, and they rubbed it out, but you can still see it somewhat where it's still there. Today we had a black water fountain and a white water fountain only. You had to go in the back door to get fed, and all of this, all the trappings down here. An extremely racist sheriff department. They had what's called a good old boy network down here going on. But what we did not understand at that time was that we had people of African descent that was used, and I mean these were brothers in the sheriff department that was paid to kill Rap Brown when he got here. These brothers were paid to kill their own people right here. When Rap Brown came in town, he was supposed to be murdered by these brothers. And so you ask yourself a question, why is it that people of African descent have all these struggles and massive struggles and stuff and still been unable to succeed? They shot Trayvon Martin. Down right down here in Florida. Here come the NAAC. Here come Jesse Jackson. Here come what's his name? The one with the process. I'll think of his name in a minute. Here he come. We need to hold a rally. We need to start having speeches. We need to organize this thing. We need to do all that. You see what I'm saying? I was witnessing a riot. I forgot exactly where it was, but I think it was down in Birmingham, Alabama, where the brothers and sisters was prepared to go to fight against the police. They were ready. They were angry because of the murders and stuff that was going on down there. But we had this one brother dressed up in a Christian priest outfit with a Bible in his hand in the middle of the street, standing between the sheriff and the crowd, the police officers in the crowd, telling the brothers and sisters, y'all need to calm down. We don't need to incite anything. Y'all need to calm down. One of the white officers ran over there, grabbed him, and threw him out of the way. You see. So I think often sometimes one of the major reasons why we have not been able to do a lot of the things that we could have done is because we had roadblocks, and these roadblocks look just like us. So let's get down in this thing, and if you got a question or comment, go ahead and raise your hand, and I'll recognize it. But in the meantime,
is the one who was picked to replace Martin King, but Jesse is the one he trained. If you had spent all this time on putting him in place, and you ain't got nobody else around Martin, now Andy was supposed to be shot with Martin, but Andy wasn't on the balcony, he was on the floor, so he didn't get it. Ralph was inside, so he didn't get it. Key point, if you spent all that time, and Martin's about to say you are agent, do you understand that you got the press goal on the assassination? Because now Martin is so continuously condemning you, you got wiretaps everywhere. And we know what he said about Jesse in front of everybody, but who knows what he said when it was just him and Ralph? How much more severe was his accusations? Such that if you didn't kill Martin, of white limitations don't run out on murder. Okay, let's let this run, and then we're going to go back and look at it again in straight speed. Look at.
He won a few times.
Right, look at Jesse. Martin still won't acknowledge him.
Usually says the speech he was caught.
Yes, go back. Now, I ask you, when you look at it, is that Jesus or Judas? Jesus or Judas?
And I saw him visibly shaking himself.
Nobody would touch him.
Let it run.
Now we're on the day of. Now Jesse went and told them, look, you better move now.
Reteaching, not violence.
I'm running out of time. This is the last supper. They brought him on the balcony at 3:06.
I said, oh.
He was shot with a 30-odd six.
I said, oh, no, I called the house and dinner is not until 6. So we are in no hurry. Oh, my goodness. But by doing that, it gave me the wonderful privilege of spending the last hour of his life in room 306. He and Ralph Abernathy and myself. Then he and I were on the balcony. Ralph was still inside. And he was greeting people he had not seen.
I was in the parking lot, and we were suggesting that it was cool, and maybe he ought to go back and take a top coat with him, just in case.
I heard him above me.
And my man, Hosea.
Okay. Now, here's Steve Coakley pointing out that Jesse Jackson set Martin Luther King up to be murdered. That's a tall accusation. I know that he had done some things, but what I look for is my questions. Anytime an accusation come up like that, my first question is, where did he attend school? That's my first question. Did he go to college? Which college did he go to? That's my second question. My third question is, where does he live? Because that would tell me a great deal about it. When there's a very serious situation finna go on inside this country where Europeans have murdered people of African descent, let's see who's coming down there to see about it. Where's Al Sharpton? He's on his way. Is Jesse coming? Yep, it's big enough for Jesse. The national advancement for colored people, where they at? They coming too, you see. So let's find out where they go to school at. Where was they? What colleges and universities did they come out? Because that would give us a great deal of information if we can find out these things, you see. See, you when you got somebody else's consciousness in your brain, you become deaf and blind. You will kill any leader that look like you or destroy any leader who look like you to keep your nation paralyzed, but you yourself live scrumptiously. And common sense have not told you, after your entire nation has been destroyed, what makes you think that the killers will not turn on you? When their overall objective and goal is to destroy all of us. It is amazing. Totally amazing to me. I stand in amazed wonderment. I know a young man personally. He goes off to college and he comes home every year. Every year he comes home, he began to tell me about the different levels that he has achieved and the different jobs that he has gotten and what he has achieved in the college. And I always ask him the same thing. And it's been at least 5 years. I've asked this man the same question for 5 years, and he has yet to give me an answer. I say, you have your degree. I say, you are in college. You are well on your way. I say, but can you please tell me who you are without telling me your name? And then there's silence.
Well, now you don't have to keep the secret anymore, Masons and Shriners. Did you know that 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence were Freemasons? I'm going into your secrets for a minute. Not you, Black Mason and Shriner. You don't have any secret. It's the white Masons and Shriners that we're going to expose in a minute. Now listen to this. At least 9 of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence were Freemasons. George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, James Monroe, John Jay, John Hancock, Paul Revere, John Paul Jones, and James Otis. Later on in 1870, out of Freemasonry came a higher order of Masons called the Shriners. Now, the difference between Masons and Shriners is that to be a Shriner, you must be a master Mason in good standing. Now, those of you who don't know anything about this, just hold your seats. I'll get back to you in a second. A Shriner belongs to the ancient Arabic order of the nobles of the mystic shrine. But wait. What kind of language is that? And all their temples or mosques are named after cities like Mecca, Medina, Syria, Aleppo. These are all parts of the Muslim world. So Arabic is in their name to describe the nobles. And a noble is a hereditary class that has special social political status in a country or state. And all white Shriners have an exalted or noble political and social status in America and nations throughout the world. Now they talk about this mystic shrine, meaning that there's some mystery attached to the shrine itself. And what is a shrine? It's a sacred place of worship associated with a holy person or a holy event, a container for sacred relics such as the bones of a saint, the tomb of a holy place, person, or other revered figure. Well, who is the saint? that is entombed in the shrine. Oh, boy. Who is that holy person whose bones are in that shrine? It's not just the bones of an architect of King Solomon's temple. No, that's cheap stuff. What is entombed in the shrine are the bones of those who are connected to the originator, and with him are the architects of that which you call universe and all therein. Now, this holy person is now entombed in mystery, meaning that there's a secretive knowledge of that tomb that is only given to those who are master masons. These people are called Muslim shriners or Muslim sons. We get a question in our lesson, why does Muhammad make the devil study from 35 to 50 years before he can call himself a Muslim son and wear the greatest and only flag of the universe? Why must he add a sword on the upper part? Oh, yeah, there. But make it big, man. Let the people see what I'm talking about. Now, you have to remember, this question is put to us by Master Farad Muhammad. And if you notice, all the shrine of temples, you see that crescent? That star with a sword over it. You think they don't know Islam? Well, now, if you look at this, this sword is over it, meaning that any time that any shriner reveals the secret of what's in that tomb, they would pay with their lives. Well, what is the secret of the ancient Arabic order of the noble of the mystic shrine? It is you. It is your destiny. It is your future. It is your origin that has been kept a secret from you, but was known by the founding fathers of this country and known by the present day rulers. Now, I want you to listen good. Elijah Muhammad said, you are the direct descendants of God Himself. I'm going to say it again. You are the direct descendant of the originator of the heavens and the earth. And you are the natural Khalifa of God Himself. Listen, listen. It is Arabic they use, because Arabic is the original language of the Asiatic black man. This black man, direct descendant of the originator of the heavens and the earth, and in him is the knowledge of how to build not a temple, but a new heaven and a new earth. They look at black people and know who we are Yeah. This holy person was hit in the head by three ruffians. Jubila, Jubilo, and Jubilum. And when he was hit in the head, he was carried to the north country and buried in a shallow grave with a sprig of cassia coming up from the grave to let the world know that there's life down here. But who? Who can get up the man in the tomb? Nobody but one with a master grip. Nobody but one with a lion's paw. The Bible says there's a lion asleep in Judah. Who will wake him? No pussycat can wake up a lion. And this pussycat leadership will never wake the black man up. You're too weak in your effort to free our people from the hand of the oppressor. This one is really a metaphor. It is an allegory. It is a fable that describes something that has happened to a real person. One who is a direct descendant and has in his DNA that potential of building a new heaven and a new earth. His name is Hiram Abiff.
Yeah. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, any questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand. When it comes to gaining education for your children and making sure that they have a correct consciousness, because that is the only way that you will be respected inside the United States, if you have a complete and total correct consciousness. I mean, common sense tells me that all other nations are allowed to come right in this country and set up shop in our neighborhood, and it is amazing because we have there's a Chinese restaurant right smack dab in the heart of our community. But you would think that when you are about to open up a business and you're going to move in a certain a person's neighborhood, and you're going to sell products, you're going to sell products that these people are accustomed to buying, and it would be a part of their culture. But when you have a nationless people and an unconscious people, when you come into their community, you put your food on the menu, and you make them buy it and consume it. And they will think that, we went out, and they tell their buddies and friends to get on the phone. Yeah, he took me out to eat Chinese the other night, child. And, ooh, that was good. You know, totally oblivious to what's going on. What did your ancestors eat? What about you? And, I mean, I'm not picking on anybody. Don't get me wrong. But what I'm trying to get you to understand is not only do you does it breed a certain amount of respect for you when you have your own consciousness and you start seeing things from your worldview, and anytime you run into somebody that don't look like you, make sure that they understand that you have a worldview just like they do. And when you're able to do that, not only do you gain respect, but you also short-circuit an enemy. You short-circuit them, especially inside the United States of America, because they don't know what to do with a woke-up person of African descent. It short-circuits everything because they are programmed to treat you a certain way all these years because you've been asleep. But when you are awake and you begin to say things and embrace things and your mannerism change and the way you, you're no longer putting chemicals in your hair that's seeping into the brain and making you crazy and all of these things, then they begin to change. They begin to look at you a little bit different. And you go to that shop and say, well, you know, I've been coming here for the past 2 years getting my nails and buying my hair from you, but I think I'm going to make this the last day. I won't be coming back anymore because I'm going to use my own nails and I'm going to wear my own hair that I was born with because I was born with 9 ether hair. And in order for me to look like you, I got to come down a little bit and get 6 ether hair. 9 is higher than 6. And that's an antenna. And that connects you along with your pineal gland. That it serves as an antenna to connect you with the universe. That's why it was given to you. And when you say, well, I'm gonna cut off my hair. I'm gonna put all these chemicals in my hair, and I'm going to the store and buy some hair and put on my head. That's gonna make me beautiful. What were you before you bought it? Who told you that you were unattractive? Who did that to you? And don't get me wrong. Now I don't want you to think I'm picking on you. But I'm just the type of man, I like natural. That's just me. I like natural. I had a date one time, and the girl came in. She looked like her hair had been sculpted. And she liked my. She said, you like my hair? I said, no. She said, well, I do. I said, well, I don't. And anyway, that was her last date. Let me go on to the next plug here. And y'all forgive me tonight because I'm just trying to make a few points here. Let's deal with let's hear from our Europeans and let's see what they got to say. We have an interview here with Steve Coakley versus Ruben. We want to hear what he got to say about this.
White supremacy is the problem. Jews just happen to be white. I think Irving shows a good example of the immaturity possessed by many Jews who overreact and disrespect blacks' legitimate concerns regarding Jews.
It appears as if
people like Irving have a certain level of immaturity that they just can't imagine that a person that talks as illegitimate as he talks is not in some form
Mr. Coakley,
so peewee that he isn't even worth responding to.
But Mr. Coakley, you can't blame him for reacting when you get up before an audience and read a statement, I don't care where it comes from, to the effect that Jewish doctors are inoculating black kids with AIDS.
Well, I think what you ought to do is look into the New York Times, which talked about the doctors in Zaire who got an agreement with Mobutu to shoot up black people. This ethnic weapons program is being used all over the world. Unfortunately,
Mr. Coakley, you mentioned the ethnic weapons program. How much of the problems in the black community of Chicago are the blacks' own fault?
Well, white supremacy is the main problem in our community. If we resolve white supremacy, we will resolve the problems of unemployment. We will resolve the problems of bad housing. The Reagan administration probably represented the epitome of white supremacy by cutting into every domestic livable program that whites and blacks had, especially poor people, and they showed their relationship with these people by proving their insensitivity. Now,
well, Mr. Coakley, you've attacked Jesse Jackson, you attacked the late Mayor Harold Washington, you called them colorless. What black leaders, political leaders in this country, do you respect?
Well, I think politics has a way of accommodation. I don't think we have true political leaders in the sense of that you're going to find purity in politics. Politics is about accommodation and compromise. When our black leaders go into politics, as was discussed recently in Harper's Magazine, blacks have to prove to whites that they will protect their interests first. That's why politics is not the type of game that we're going to continue to invest all our time in, because it's proven that it doesn't work. Politics will not whip white supremacy. But clear, accurate, documented challenges to white supremacy, as well as action, grassroots action, taken against the forces of white supremacy. I thought it was awfully strange.
All right, Mr. Coakley.
Okay.
Mr. Coakley, we have to take a break for a commercial. Mr. Levin, same. We'll be back in just a minute. heard what Mr. Coakley said, and you don't agree with him, and I don't agree with him. I don't think Pat agrees with him. But
I would really...
Aren't you taking this to the limits when you call him names on this program and when you make the remarks you make about violence?
You know, I got to tell you something. I really had tremendous reservations about coming on this program with him because, as Pat said, you're building him up. Nobody would know what he is, animal, vegetable, or mineral, but we're building him up. So the fact is, you've got to call him exactly what he is. I would like to ask him, if I may, why is it that every night in Los Angeles, there's a mini Holocaust going on here, and it's got nothing to do with white racism? We have black kids killing black kids over cocaine, over other kinds of dope and paraphernalia. Why isn't he here? Why isn't this Farrakhan fellow here trying to stop the black-on-black carnage that's going on in this nation? Black raving gangs traveling throughout this nation, killing other black people.
All right, Mr. Coakley, answer him.
Well, since you gave him the privilege to ask the question, and I then will expect the same privilege subsequent to that, it's very clear that black-on-black crime and other syndromes in the black community are what black people do when they don't understand who the enemy is. Part of the problem with the tapes that were heard by those who played them was that in those tapes were names of very prominent people. It talked about the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderberger Group. Now, we're not that immature. I don't believe in the word conspiracy. As a researcher, it's my job to present the best evidence. I think that the best evidence is what should go forward, and that you all ought to grow up enough to be able to dialogue with blacks who have legitimate concerns, who just so happen may have been trained by you, who understand your pathologies well, and who would expect you to step up for the dialogue rather than to continue to stoop down. I think Irvin is a stooper. Now, Irvin, I'd like to ask you, what positive contribution have you made in the last 20 years of your life to have added something to this problem of black-Jewish relationships rather than to be the manipulator that you are? Obviously, you're not on this show for any positive contribution.
Well, I'll tell you.
Just what is your game?
I'll tell you exactly what I did. And perhaps I'm foolish for it now because I realize where you're coming from. I went down south to Forsyth County, Georgia, and I marched with about 25,000 beautiful people, both black and white, and thank God you weren't there because my stomach would have turned and I would have had to throw up all over you. If
you don't know that I wasn't there.
Well, I didn't see you, and thank God I didn't. Because if I hadn't done anything in the last 20 years except stand up to animals like you, then there's a place in heaven for me.
Well, see, what's the problem with the black-Jewish relationships across the country
and
now?
You're the problem.
We have
you
to admit
are the problem.
That there has been no violence on the part of blacks towards whites, probably even though there's reason for some violence. And I think by exacerbating the racial tensions.
What do you got against
Christians? I hope that you all know, Pat and Mr. Braden, that on the national level in Congress, there's an attempt to pass anti-group defamation laws. In fact, Newsweek on June 6th did an article about it, where out of Hofstra University has come the desire to outlaw racial slurs. And those people that were alluded to in the article said that they were going to spend this summer setting the climate to make it possible to outlaw racial slurs and make a gentleman like myself a criminal, though I've never been arrested in my life.
Well,
so it
Coakley,
appears as if we're being used to set the climate in America.
Mr. Coakley, what gestures have you made toward racial understanding and equality?
Well, first, it should be said that during the time that I was in the mayor's office, not one single person accused me of abusing the power that I had within my control. In fact, it strikes me as strange. The Jewish Federation in Chicago used to pass confidential documents to me to take to the mayor prior to anyone even seeing them. That surely doesn't sound like a person who was mistrusted. And I could tell you that in Chicago, we're coming forward with blacks who really represent the black community and disregarding those blacks chosen by Jews for these dialogue ventilation sessions. We're coming forward with some real leadership. We're coming out to propose a research project where we can go back to the beginning of time and trace the relationships between blacks and Jews to assess just where this problem started. It didn't start in the civil rights movement. It didn't start in the early 1900s when they started the NAACP and the Urban League. It started back in the beginning of time. And unless we have this study,
we won't resolve the conflict. You know, I'd like to say it started with people like Jesse Jackson and people like Coleman Young and people like this fellow, Mr. Coakley.
That's
people
immature.
Who are jealous of Jews. The reason there is black in the strike today is because these blacks are jealous of Jews. And that's the only reason.
Well,
jealous
quite frankly,
success.
Quite frankly,
you can't make it and we can.
Well, quite frankly, Irvin, even in Israel,
and my name is Irv.
Sephardic Jews who are of color are also discriminated against by European and Soviet Jews. I think this problem is bigger than we ever assessed. And
all
that
right,
Jews,
gentlemen.
Especially white Jews, have a problem.
Wow. Now, that's what I call rough. Okay? Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want to mention one more time before we go into the next segment. We have created, for those of you who have children at home and you're looking for an answer to getting your kids educated, I've created one of the most comprehensive libraries inside the United States, and there are children all over the United States that are in this thing. And I hear from the parents and sometimes from the children, and what they're doing is they are going inside my library, and they are actually running copies of the materials off and putting it in their book bags. And when they go to school and the teachers begin to throw the Eurocentric at them, they take the materials out and they begin to question the teacher. And the next thing out their mouth is, I have evidence, because on several occasions the teachers ask them, can you prove that? And the kids say, yes, ma'am, here it is right here. And they pull out this beautifully printed material and give it to the teacher. The teacher look over it, gets angry, and tells the child that they're going out and pick up paper and send them to the principal's office. And, of course, we have a few lawsuits going, and we're directing that like an orchestra. And so for those of you who want to educate your children, and just contact me, area code 904-303-9061. And I would provide you with a device whereby you can do that right there in the privacy of your home, and so that your children can end up with their correct consciousness and their correct way of thinking, so they can survive and they can be respected and short-circuit the enemy at the same time. They start off early in life, they can do that. Please contact me at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we can get you in that library. Don't forget, next Thursday, we're going to have the Grand National Chairman for the Moorish American Government. He will be here, and we'll do the final part of this on the Masons and the Illuminati, and that'll be 1, 2, 3. And this will be the final part, and this time we'll give you all of the final information on this thing, so you will always be able to go back to my archives and get all the facts on this information, because we're laying it out, and we're pulling the covers off of the secret societies, the Boule, the Masons, the Illuminati, the whole ball of wax is being done right here. Now, don't forget, if you got questions, comments, go ahead and raise your hand, okay?
Forte, an analysis of the rebellion. I highly recommend you get that tape. That's a 4.5-hour analysis of the rebellion. I did it in Washington, D.C. I did a video version of the lecture here in Long Beach. It's on videotape for $40. Both of them are high-quality Copley work. The main thing about it is a discussion that's about Cecil Murray within the dialogue. And even last week when we talked about the intelligence community, we talked about how the intelligence community used Cecil Murray to replace the Jesse Jackson figure who usually shows up to ventilate the people. And that Operation Cool Down was preconceived at least 30 days prior to the rebellion to put 2,000 to 5,000 black men in the streets to cool it down. And we have a project going on all over the country called Project Freeze Frame. Think about this. We're going to do it here in L.A. I got a whole garage full of papers, even though I have mostly same papers from Washington of your rebellion. We got Operation Freeze Frame. What it is around the country, we believe that if we take the names of all of the people who, when the stuff started, asked for the stuff to stop. This is a formula. Whoever went out and said, please no violence, we need their name, and we need their name computated. We need to know who it is will show up when the heat comes. Now, why would I, for someone who I claim I never liked, jump out and ask to relieve the pressure off of them? No, don't hurt them. In the Ride Report tape, you hear me talk about Francis Quelch Welsing, who in Washington, D.C., went right on the radio, unannounced guest, to tell the people in Washington, no riot, no rebellion, no violence. And then she said, it's like I tell my children when they gotta, when they're on the school bus and they gotta use it, I tell them that you gotta learn how to hold it. So she got up and preached to no violence. And so all around the country, in every single city, there was a certain group of people. Some were cadres of ministers. Some were newscasters. Some were community leaders. Some were just little old people on the street. On no matter what level, we need to know who will show up to help the white man. Because anyone who called an end to the violence are the people that we're going to have to deal with at another point in time. And when we announce that you end up freeze-framed in those situations, in the future, less people will volunteer for the position. This is room that we need. And we're going to get the room by acknowledging those who have this uncharacteristic behavior of choosing to assist the beast. All the beast wanted at any moment was to stop the violence. Let me talk with you. Let's reason this out. Come on, TV. Let me give you a grant. Get in line. Just wait on. Hold them down, man. Give them a nigga police chief. Anything to hold it down. And they held it down. They held it down. And the other side of it was so that we keep acknowledging things. And if you read the story here, not only in the riot report that I talk about how they put this brother on every newspaper in the country, but I also talked about how that FBI informant Butler, who hang up under his ass, went on the front of every newspaper in the country, and Butler is the one put Geronimo Pratt in jail. Check. He live up in the church. Check. And the word went out that he's a, and here they call him the incubator of the church. What that mean? He in the middle of the business. And it said the church grows $4 million a year in Sunday receipts. $4 million a year in Sunday receipts. Now, check, this is 177th point of life, George Bush. See, we didn't know that until it come up. See, it didn't come up till afterwards. He was already in the fold. Got the FEMA money, the weed and seed money, getting all the money, ARCO money. It's a picture in here with my man Mark Whitlock. I know he's a little deceptive. Boy. I already dealt with him, so I've been up in the church.
Check.
Brothers, some of the brothers been up in the church with me. It didn't go well. But surely we stood our ground and communicated we was with God. We didn't know who they was impersonating.
Come on.
And they knew who we were. They felt that they know. I know who they with. God, it sure is bad when they show up. Make it tough on the con man. But here's Mark Whitlock right here with the minister with his hand open with a white man in the room.
Oh, boy.
But what's interesting is the caption in the picture. It says this is a meeting about economic development in the community. It says from left, an executive who asked not to be identified. White man. White man in the picture, he don't want his name out. He in the room cutting a deal with some niggas.
Check.
But he don't want his name out. Check. Now, all the other nigga name all in there. Mark Whitlock, Head of Fame, Gerald Collins of the Bank of Montreal, Peggy and Murray Hill. All got, they got more plaques on his wall than he got paint. Now, say minister only make $35,000. I was sitting up reading this with somebody. Said he only make $35,000. I said, they bought the nigga the car. Next paragraph. We just bought him a new car. I said, plus they got Minister Appreciation Day. That's when he get that $50,000 to $100,000 cash. No, that ain't his salary. That's his bonus. You think he's bringing in $4 million and he don't get no percentage? The $35,000 come from the AME, who pay all, the AME, the Methodist, the Baptist, they all pay their missionaries to hold down the real estate. That's real estate they standing on. That real estate belongs to the mothership. That's the AME mothership.
Yeah.
So AME mothership pay all their missionaries, like the United Church of Christ, pay their ministers. Methodists pay their ministers to hold the real estate for the religion. Okay, so anyway, when we come back to the intelligence community, we're going to come back to this subject since it's so prevalent where we standing now. Oh, Ed, Brother Ed, you looked at anything else in the article you think need to be relayed to the people you...
No, not at this point.
All right, check. Sure. All right, so not at this point. Get them, Ed. You're going to have it later, Ed. All right. All right. One other thing, as I was saying, we talked the other night, we talked about the intelligence community. I have some copies of that tape up here. I highly recommend it for those of you all who are around. There's one or two things in that lecture that I really want to better have the people understand. One other thing. talked about was who ends up in a file. We looked at some old files that the government had had, and we found out that in one case they had a category for Category 1, Category 2, Category 3, and Category 4. And these were the categories that they fit the people in. And Category 1 was all the national leaders. Category 2 was the sub or the second or third in command leaders. And Category 3 was the rank and file. Category 4 was anybody who wasn't in Categories 1, 2, and 3. And that was just to tell us that even though you don't understand how you may end up in a file, way the categories go down, everybody fit in the file some kind of way, even a child. So that fourth category, that all of the above type of thing is type of a thing that we suffer from. And then we talked a little bit about, it might still be left on here, we talked a little bit about a formula from a book on the military intelligence community. And this was a formula. Many of the books, if you start to analyze books that are actually written by the intelligence agencies or used in these schools and watch it, we got blacks in each statement.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions or comments at this point, if there's anything that is you've heard on this broadcast from me or any of the plugs that I put on, if you disagree with it, go ahead and raise your hand, and you can give us your point of view, and we're more than happy to listen. Okay? Now, I want to say one more thing. We're going to don't forget your national conference calls that are held 7 days a week with the Moorish American government. And the way to dial into that at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time is to dial the number 760-569-7100. And the access code is 437-966-pound. That's 7 days a week, Eastern Standard Time, starting at 7:30 p.m. And make sure you got your paper and pencil handy because you're going to learn a great deal. There's also a question and answer period where if you have any questions, you can go ahead and ask these questions. They'll be answered for you. There's more in there from all over the United States. You'll hear them come in, and when you get in there, you'll be registered right there with that government. In order to register yourself and your family online, you go to MoorishAmericanGov.org. That's MoorishAmericanGov.org. We have never been citizens of the United States. We are not now, and neither can we ever be, because the United States of America is a corporation. There's no corporation on the face of the earth that can make you a citizen. But here's an opportunity for you to become a citizen under your own government with your own constitution, your own national flag, your own great seal, your own rules and regulations and bylaws, and with everything else and all the accoutrements that go with the government. A lot of people say, well, okay, you got this government. Why nobody don't recognize you as government? Well, the first thing you have to understand is there is no cookie cutout of government. The way that's done is you declare yourself a government, and through determination and association and accumulation of your people, and you muster the strength of becoming a government, that's how you are recognized by the nation. You'll have the support that you need from other nations. But we are so busy condemning and looking for something instant and automatic that we don't even have time enough to go ahead and participate so that we can become a government. All we need is the people. Everything else is already in the mission statement. When they brought it into the United Nations, they looked at it and said, we've been waiting on it for over 60 years. They signed it. They said, go get all your children, all your family members, bring everybody in, and we'll put you on the roster to recognize you. That's all it takes. The only thing we need now is the people. There are over 60 million people of African descent inside the United States. But we got groups over here, we got clubs over there, we got condemnation here, condemnation there, we got nitpicking about this, that, and the other, and all over. And as long as we have division, a house divided against itself cannot stand. So what I'm doing here, along with the Grand National Chairman and other divine ministers across the country, we're doing everything that we can to expose the truth to you and point to the door for you to come in. It's wide open. All you got to do is come in. Okay? Now, if you got any questions, ask your questions, we'll answer it for you. But don't contact me to beat me up about something that I'm trying to do to help my own people. Don't do that. That's foolish. if your nation is in shambles, I mean, I have been on broadcast where I was badgered almost into outer existence. It was unbelievable. I mean, I was constantly attacked here and attacked there, and it was unbelievable. My question is, okay, if I ain't this and this is wrong and that is wrong, could you please tell me what your nationality is? You understand what I'm saying? Okay, so let's go on to the next segment here. And if you got any questions coming, go ahead and raise your hand, and I'll be
on the corner of the stage on each side. The gas is supposedly out in this parking lot, and little did we know that James Edward Best is out there in that same parking lot.
Correct.
This is the alleged shooter of the next day.
And he's seen outside with two or three other men with him.
Right. And he calls Wazir to come out to the door. And Wazir goes to the door.
He went to the door.
And then as the so-called gas comes, it's my understanding that the lights got to flickering and the mic stopped vibing. So now you're dealing with multiple coordination of moments now. Now, Bess is a man who then drove all the way down from Seattle. Remember, the last person who vouched for seeing Beth the weekend before was the gentleman Brock. And we made an excellent point when the ADL, who
Brock
was then on the setup,
Brock of
reparation thing in Cobra, they know Brock. He'd be right here in D.C. working with these spotlight people. And Brock used to sit right in the hotel, right over in the lobby. But after them days when I lined him up. Now, how Brock got off was Eric Mohammed let him off. Now, when we had him trapped with the four questions about having been with Beth the weekend before, Eric said, Steve Copley said 10 times, said two bits of the question. And Brock says, I ain't getting to what Steve Copley said. And that was the answer. Let it stop right there. We had him up in New York. He came up to Eric's place. I was there June 10th. He came right before me, like June 1st, June 4th, somewhere in there. And he was very evasive, but it was the ADL report that tried to make Brock and College buddies. But Brock had told me distinctively that he didn't like College and that he liked Best. And he said, what do you want me to do, tell you that he told me he was going to go kill him? Brock said that Best asked him to ride with him down to Los Angeles. And then that's when I got a call from the people in Fresno. As the people in Fresno saw Beth drive through town with several people, he stops in Fresno, because supposedly his brother or somebody was from Fresno, California, somewhere Fresno was hooked. And the Fresno people called me to tell me that Beth was there before he came on to Los Angeles. Beth had a disproportionate amount of money, $25,000 he had received. He was in a car that was not his. He was at the scene and got locked out of his car. And the police, without him even having a registration slip, without him even having ownership, he didn't even have the keys, jimmied the car and opened the car up so he could get the guns out the car to come into the plaza area. Heavy series of things that had to happen for the patsy to get pulled into this area.
This was the sack with the 39 millimeters in it.
Right, that allegedly was found in the area.
But the 30-06 rifle with the scope was still supposedly in the vehicle that the cops opened, jimmied the lock to open to let Beth into. While the lecture was going on.
And what was Martin King shot with?
30-06.
And he was called on the balcony at what time? 3 minutes. To 6. He was dead at what time? And Colin, it was 6 o'clock when you was outside of that building. 6 o'clock.
The rifle in the car or the trunk?
I'm not sure.
No one's at the back seat. They were going just the back
wrong.
I'm not sure if it was in the trunk in the back seat or where.
Okay, this is take us to the day of. I don't think the He thinks they tried to do his best. One was to say that motive. You always got to develop a motive. So the motive, this is Brother Jamal interviewing the student leader who was out there at that moment. And at the Marla Gibbs event, as the doors swing open, because those doors did open up on that side, did they not? These are those type of doors, at Riverside, actually. But Marla Gibbs had these kind of double set of doors there on the side of the stage, on both sides. And in fact, that they swing those doors open. I'm going to tell you exactly what I found, that the brothers who were acting like the nation on that side of the building asked those people to start coming out that door. They tried to get them up, those people in that left-hand section, and move them out. You say, open up them doors in the back. Because people was moving, you know, people started running and scurrying and getting real systematic.
Yeah, that was the nation that night. They were not acting.
Right.
That was my summer 27th
right.
West Coast regional headquarters where I had been minister before.
Right.
That was, they were allowed to be on post with me
that night. That
they were
night.
Not there at Cal State.
The next night.
Riverside.
Which was interesting, because that day they had to be in straight tie. That night they was in bow tie.
Correct.
And now you've got this weird series of events unfolding there in the auditorium. What you see, brother?
It's a temple.
So what?
Oh,
okay. Okay, so, wrong page again. Let's go. This is now, this should take you behind. I'm just going to show this, let him, you can see this while we're talking over it, but this is now the day of. After this incident with the doors opening up, the speech went on. It was a strong night. Audience was wild. Thing was strong. That night after, this is the brush, that night after the program, you go and eat, you're out in the community.
Roscoe's
Chicken and Waffles, right. And the question would be, what operation was shifting around during that period? Now, this is the day of the shooting attempt at Riverside. This is now looking out the back door. You can notice that this is a full line of trees, but notice that hunk of tree cut out. Who else was shot with a .30-06 in a row of bushes?
King.
Martin King, thank you. With a .30-06. Now notice how thick the brushes are. Thick, open. You see that? Thick, open. Now the question is, the bushes that are open, is this been open or just open? Now the brothers, this is natural. The brothers are on the scene. They're naturally trying to figure something out. This is what you need to do more often. Just naturally try to figure. So don't assume people who are even.
Okay, that is Steve Coakley describing an attempted assassination of Khalid Muhammad by the same secret societies, the Boulets and the Masons, and you have to understand that anytime you're attempting to do something, meaning stand up inside this country, and you have to be very careful who's running to join your movement, to get inside and sit there to find out what you're doing, you see, in order to run back and tell the oppressor so that you can remain in the shallow grave. It is very, very odd that we have people of African descent who is bent on keeping their own selves and their own kind buried in this shallow grave, which is the God man keeping him down. But the prophets have said that the time is going to come when he will rise up. So they are trying to run their course and. But anytime somebody tell you I'm a Mason with great pride and stuff, you don't have to condemn them or argue with them. You know the truth, and you know which direction to make your exit. Now, I want to mention also that we have our free articles, the 14th Amendment Exposing the Commerce Game, and you can get those by simply contacting me at area code 904-303-9061. And I will get that to you by email attachments. You have to call me. Do not send anything by email to me at tahaka99@yahoo.com. That website, that email location has been hijacked in an attempt to try to extort money from people that are my contacts, and I was unable to bring all the contacts over to my new email address. So anything that you are seeking from me, you can go ahead on the just type my name into Google, Tahaka Amana El Bay, and go where you need to go. And but for your free articles, and if you want to get the library for you and your family and your home for your education and correct education, with your which will make put a consciousness, a correct consciousness in your brain, contact me at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we will get that to you. Okay. Now, we're going to go into a another segment here. We only have 13 minutes, so if you got a question or comment.
How hard have they tried to maintain and protect one of the people that they know was in on the assassination? And in 1977, this is from the book called The Man to See. It's by Evan Thomas, and it's on Edward Bennett Williams, a white man who used to own the Baltimore Orioles. If you read that book by Spike Lee on the Malcolm X movie, Captain Joseph talks about Elijah Muhammad going to Benny Williams to try to get the men out of jail who were allegedly accused of shooting Malcolm X. So he was known as a real fix-it white man who could fix a case in a minute. Big-time white boy. Also chaired the president's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, like the outside intelligence people on the inside of the government. Even at one point rumored to be Deep Throat. That's right, yeah, just let it run. That's Posner. Stop. Let's see if we stop that. Oh, let's go back a little bit. Let's show the face of Gerald Posner, the little mop-headed white boy. Right there. Oh, here we go. Turn on. Let's go a little slow. Not there. That's the Mason Temple. Stop right there. That boy right there, Gerald Posner, he wrote this book right here, Killing the Dream. He wrote this book, Killing the Dream. And on the back of his book is that picture with Jesse, Martin, and Ralph, with Martin looking real puzzled. Can you see that? Okay. And in his book, Killing the Dream, he tries to help out Billy Kyles, because in William Pepper's book, Orders to Kill, he says that Kyles is a Memphis Police Department informant. So Posner, he's going to defend Billy Kyles, and he puts this in his book. He says, Mike Ware. Said Jordan gained the election. In his book, Orders to Kill, William Pepper raises the strong inference that Kyles might have been an FBI informant. It's degrading and insulting, quote, Kyles says, about the author Pepper's accusations. It casts an aspersion over my 40 years in the civil rights movement. I saw how Pepper operates. Now, he says that he's appalled that Pepper called him an FBI informant. Check. But what did I say Pepper called him?
An FBI informant?
No, I said that Pepper accused him in this book, Orders to Kill. See, you got to listen to them somatically. See, they're going to deny something, but they ain't going to deny what they were accused of. In Orders to Kill, this book, William Pepper says that Kyles, he talks to the police chief, Sam Evans, who was running things then. He said, Kyles was one of my informants, Billy Kyles. was an informant. Billy Cowles is the one that told the police that Martin King don't need no protection that day. Okay? Billy Cowles is the one that made sure Martin King had his tie on. It was the briefing at 4:30 after Ray was checking in at 4 o'clock that said that friendlies will not be wearing ties, coding the people who were on the government side in the assassination scenario would not be wearing a tie. One guy that night was in an argument with Martin King because he was just insisting that he was not going to wear a tie to go to dinner. Who was that? Jesse Jackson. So much so that the argument is what held Martin King on the balcony so the shooting could go down after Kyles stepped away so they could get a better shot. Check? But my point here is that Posner defends Kyles as not being an FBI informant. The only problem was he was accused of being a Memphis Police Department informant. I mean, to me and you, an informant is an...
Okay. We have another caller coming in, area code 313. Where you calling from? Question or comment? 313. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, you see how that played out? See, in this country here, we have to understand that we've been led to believe and we've been told most of our life to go to school, get a good education so that we can get a good job. My parents done me the same way. But my father, he owned his own business. And I always told my mama that I want to own my own business. And she would become angry with me. She'd say, well, you need to stop thinking like that and going on to get you a job. And I say, well, go get a job and work all my life and die and haven't contributed nothing. The only thing that I knew that a lot of my uncles had was they had the homes and the cars. But as far as the nation was concerned, it was in shambles. And I never knew them to do anything on a national level involving helping the people nationally. So I decided I made my own decision not to go that route. And I've always been in business for myself and used my own mind and took responsibility and embraced responsibility to do things for my own self. And apart from doing the library to help my people, I have other things that I do to earn income for myself and to pay my bills. But the thing is, the Creator has given us all talents, and all we have to do is use these talents, and anything it is that you want from your Creator, you simply ask for it, and you wait on it, and He'll give it to you. You go ahead and prepare yourself for it, because if you're sincere, He will ask you to give it to you. And the greatest focal point in your life is when preparedness and opportunity meet. But make sure that what you're wanting is something that is beneficial to you and beneficial to others, and it's going to contribute to the uplifting of you and your people, okay? Now, we only have a few minutes left, so for those of you who have questions and comments, go ahead and raise your hand, and I recognize them. This is your opportunity. Don't forget, on a Thursday night, this coming Thursday night, the Grand National Chairman will be with us for the final part three, and this time we're going to deal with the Masons and the Illuminati. Tonight we're showing you the ramifications of how the secret societies, including the Boule, which all are part of sorority and self, have participated in the keeping buried the God man and not allowing him to get up. Any time he tried to raise his head to aid his people, he was cut off. But his own people was used in every instance to destroy him. And I mean, this same thing goes on today. It goes on all across the United States. A lot of them come out of your churches. I had one gentleman told me one day, he was in the church, and he told me, he says, I studied this and I studied that, and I'm a Mason, and I have a lot of power, and I can get this done and this, that, and the other done. And I said, well, okay, brother, you know, I didn't argue with him. We're going to our last and final caller. We only got a few seconds left, few minutes left. Here we go, 804. Y'all, where you calling from? What's your question or comment? Area code 804.
Hello?
Okay. All right. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we only have 4 minutes left, so I'm going to go ahead and close out this broadcast. And so I need you all to go ahead and contact me at area code 904-303-9061 in regards to getting your library so that you can provide a correct consciousness for yourself and your children so that they will be armed in dealing with the onslaught. The young sister at the earlier part of the broadcast has already stated that it is against the law for you to keep your children home, and but that doesn't mean that you cannot get this thing and put it inside your home and let your children do their studies there, and that way they will have a consciousness and they'll be able to have some way of combating the situation against them. I've been your host, Otaka Amano LB, and until next time, you all have a good evening, okay?
That's all right, sweet mama.